Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
Are you having trouble getting along with your teenager? Of course you are. We all are. Teenagers are impossible to get along with. Well, there is an actual physiological reason that they are harder to get along with than, say, your 4-year-old or your 24-year-old. Our guest, Dr. Andrew Garner, is a member of the AAP Committee on Psychosocial Aspects of Child and Family Health. So, Dr. Garner, teenagers sometimes seem impossible to get along with. The yelling that goes on between the teenager and the parent can sometimes rock the house. What can we do to change that cycle of, I told you to do this, well, I didn't hear you, and it goes on?
Well, it can be a difficult time. And part of it is the biology of the brain. We've talked previously about the fact that there's sort of two different parts of the brain that we're learning to mature at different rates. And so the prefrontal cortex is the part that allows us to sort of think abstractly. It's what we want from our kids, to plan, to be organized, to be social. But it's not completely developed until the mid-20s. On the other hand, there's this part called the amygdala, which is sort of the flight-or-flight response, which is mature much sooner. It's structurally mature six years before the prefrontal cortex is. So as a consequence, they are a little more edgy, they are a little more emotional, they are a little more stressed. And so if we go into it acknowledging that, then that may help a little bit, is that if we're trying to stay cool, calm, and collected, that will help a lot. Because what we're really talking about is discipline. And what we need to remember, of course, is the word discipline means to teach, right? And so modeling is probably the most important factor then, because, you know, modeling is a very effective form of education. And I'm always astonished when parents, you know, who frequently yell or speak harshly to the kids are so shocked when the kids do the same, right? So we have to be careful. We have to make sure that we're teaching them the techniques that we want. And so I think across age groups, particularly so in adolescence, we have to remember that discipline and punishment, they're not really the same, right? I mean, punishment is one form of discipline, and it can be effective in the short term, but it actually can be counterproductive in the long term. And so across all age groups, I think we really want to make sure that our discipline is both personal and personalized. And so what I mean by that is, a safe, stable, and nurturing relationship is the basis for effective discipline no matter what the age is, because it's really hard to learn. Again, if discipline means to teach, and what we want our kids is to learn, it's really hard to learn when you're hungry and you're scared and you're tired, right? And it's really hard to learn if you don't believe you do any better, or even worse, if nobody notices when you're trying, right? So we have to make sure that there's a core good relationship there.
And give plenty of positive encouragement when you catch them being good.
Well, that's it. That's it. So sort of the general rule of development, whether it's, you know, we're talking about toddlers all the way up, is it's a whole lot easier to teach kids what we want them to do than to keep them from doing something we don't want them to do. So when they are doing the things we want them to do, if we're catching them being good and reinforcing that, that's really, really important. And so sometimes when we talk about discipline, we talk about being positive. And sometimes people confuse that as being permissive, right? You know, so when we talk about being positive, you know, my grandmother said you get more flies with honey than vinegar, right? So we're talking about, you know, acknowledging effort in the right direction. So that's sort of being positive and reward. We're rewarding them with attention and acknowledgement for things they're doing in the right direction. But we're also being sort of positive in outlook. We have to remain confident in the child's ability to do better the next time, right? And so we have to say, you know, I know you can do better. You know, how can I help you do better? Because I know you can, and we're gonna get through this. So you have to be positive in outlook, because we know that decreases stress, and that decreases the amygdala. And then the last thing is we have to be positive in regard. That's that personal part I was talking about, that, you know, we may dislike kids' behavior a lot, but we always have to love the child. You always have to love the child.
And, you know, that's not always an easy feeling to feel when teenagers are making you crazy. Now, I just heard myself in your description, and parents, I hope you heard what he said. We've got to remember to praise the good. I always threaten to take the video games away if my son doesn't do something that I think he should have done, or if he's gotten bad grades, or if he rushed through his homework. And, you know, So am I doing the wrong thing as using
not
his... Because it seems to work because the video game seems to be all he cares about.
Right. Well, that's it. So what we're talking about here is the removal of privileges, right? And so, yes, that is a non-threatening form of punishment. So when we talk about punishment, you know, we really want to get away from any sort of corporal punishment because we know that ends up causing problems down the line, that if we're spanking or using corporal punishment, that can escalate into abuse. And again, it often happens when parents are emotionally charged, and so we're sending the signal that, you know, it's okay to be violent when you're angry. You know, and that's not really the message we want to send. But yeah, removal of privileges is a non-threatening form of punishment, and that can be effective, but it's sort of doing a behavioral approach. And what I mean by that is, you know, the behavioral approach is to reinforce the good behavior, try to ignore the bad behavior, and if it's really bad, then you're going to have some sort of consequence. And the truth is the behavioral approach really well when they're young, and we know from studies that it can help with behavior in a short term. But in the long term, we probably need to focus more on the emotions that are driving behaviors because, again, if the real long-term goal is self-regulation, self-discipline, what we really need to do is be teaching skills to how to deal with it. So as they get older and their verbal skills start improving, we need to recognize and validate emotions. You look really angry. You look really mad. I know you're really frustrated. So just we know from studies, again, using these MRIs of the brain, just labeling an emotion brings it down. So just saying, yeah, I'm mad, just the recognition that I'm mad brings it down and makes you less mad. Right?
And right there, that's an easy sort of, because as we speak about getting along with your teenager, now you said don't be permissive, and using positive enforcement.
Yeah.
Naming the actual emotion, naming it, giving it a name, giving it an identity so that then you can deal with it. What else can we do to, you know, make them understand that we love them and or stop the screaming back and forth? Because, I mean, and even if they're learning to drive, Dr. Garner, we can't be that nervous mom, because they're going to freak out that too.
Well, that's it. I think in general, as parents, and I'm guilty of this as well, we sort of have an overemphasis on behavior. Stop this, stop that, do this, do that. And I think we have an underemphasis on the underlying emotions that's often driving the behavior. I think we, particularly in adolescence, we want to make sure that we have our own emotions in control because we're modeling a good behavior. And we may be seething, but it's probably really important to stay calm and to try and think objectively. The other thing I would say is it's absolutely exhausting, but we want to try and promote sort of collaborative problem solving. And what I mean by that is when you're having this recurrent conflict, the best thing to do is probably to actually help them solve it with you, which, again, is completely exhausting. But if we're setting clear expectations, we need this, you want to do this, let's problem solve it and make sure we can make this in a win-win situation, because that's a good example, I think, of what we're trying to do long-term. Again, you know, we tend to want to just focus on behavior and say, I want you to stop doing this, I want you to stop doing that, but we don't actually want to raise lemmings, right? We actually want people who can think for themselves and make good decisions. We just need to help them do that. And so if we can try and include them in the plan of how something can happen, and also the consequences. What do they think the fair consequences if their homework's not done at a certain time? You know, do they lose the phone the next day? Again,
So basically involve them in the process, and more importantly, even try and control our own emotions. In the last 20 seconds, Doc, your best advice for getting along with your teenager?
My best advice would be that because the amygdala is going full throttle and the prefrontal cortex isn't, we need to make sure we stay calm, cool, and collected so we're not engaging the amygdala. And we need to try and encourage them to use their prefrontal cortex to work with us to come up problem solving that works for both of us.
That is great advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Andrew Garner. Remember, you can listen anytime on demand or on the go to RadioMD.com. This is Melanie Cole. Stay well.